old letters. Some of you may have kept old letters from times past. Maybe a note written from a friend, even in high school. A parent wrote a note. Maybe you've kept some emails. They're often fun to read to see what was said at the time because they all reflect a time and a place. And as we're looking at the letters of Paul, and we're going to be looking for several weeks now in Philippians, you have to understand the time and place of the letter to see the message that Paul has for them and for what it means for us today. Context is everything. As the family member who gets all the relics when things are divided, I have a letter written from a cousin in North Carolina to a cousin in Kentucky. And it's very chatty. It's about the health of the different people and how the cows and the crops are doing. And really, it's a letter that could be written at any time up into the 50s. I would even say we're so much of the country focused in agriculture, even though there's big transitions made then, but it could have easily been written at any time. Now, there is a reference in the letter to will there be a war, but again, that could be any time. Is it the 1940 and wondering if we will be brought into the war? Is it 1952 and the fears of the Cold War was always a fear, will this trigger the big one? Or even 1915. You know, there's a thing going on in Europe. Are we going to be brought into it? But if you look at the top, it's dated in early April of 1861. To realize that by the time the cousin in Kentucky would have received the letter, Fort Sumter would have been fired. The firing of Fort Sumter would have taken place. Lincoln would have called for troops. And by May 20th, North Carolina had officially seceded because of the call to troops. As the governor said, until he became governor, if blood must be shed, let it be that of strangers and not brothers. That's what forced them over the edge. But in Kentucky, knowing what I know the family history in Kentucky, that was a very divided area where they lived. It was a little skirmish, actually. So this is where the setting. And so when you read, knowing that context, it makes it just, you just think as you hear reference, will there be a war? There was a meeting, you know, and this kind of thing. So context is everything. This letter is written to the church at Philippi. A few facts. This was the first church in Europe. Now some people complain, oh, Christianity, it's a European creation. Well, they don't know what they're talking about. Because it started in Asia, Africa was number two. In fact, until the Arab Muslim invasions and colonization that took place many centuries later, I mean, Egypt, I mean, that was the Bible Belt, was Egypt and North Africa. Very hardcore, very conservative, actually conservative area. So Europe was number three. And who were the three people who were there to start the church? One was Lydia. A businesswoman. She dealt in purple goods, that's high-end products. All right, so imagine Neiman's, okay? She runs, a manager of Neiman's, okay? Then you've got the jailer who had actually jailed Paul at one time. He could have been actually a Roman. Philippi is an outpost of Rome, a Roman colony. They had Roman citizenship. They were very proud of that because not everybody's a citizen. And so he's a minor functionary. He might have even been a retired soldier doing a second job. But again, he represents the Roman world. And then you had this slave girl. She had this curse of being able to interpret. It was demonic related, and Paul cast out the demon. Well, her slaveholder was making money off of her, but when he could no longer exploit her, kind of just gave her up. And so the Christians took her in. And they're the three that were the starters of this church. So between them, we see male and female. We see people representing different places, economic situations, ethnicities, cultures. And they're all brought together. So that's one thing. First in Europe, a very broad mix of people in this first church. And the church is pretty healthy. They are functional. Now, we're all met. We all got our stuff. Some folks, they got more stuff than others, though, okay? For whatever reason. And many of these churches, Galatia, they had some issues. Corinth, had issues. Colossae, they had some issues. And so that's why those letters were written. Thessalonica, they had some misunderstandings. That's why that was written. Philippi, they like Paul. Paul likes them. And they sent him a gift. And they wrote a thank you. And he's writing a thank you note. And he references a few little, you know, low-grade problems. But essentially, this is a cordial church, good relationship, pretty functional. The challenges are very low-grade. And he says to them, he who began a good work in you will complete it. Now remember how often it's written you, and in standard American English, you can be singular or plural. In the South, we know it's y'all. And I do wish the translators would just go through and make things y'all. And in fact, at some point, he's really saying all y'all. Okay? So basically, all y'all, he's done a good work in you, he will complete it. In this church, it's not only, it is for the individual, it is a personal, but it's also corporate. It is for this larger church that God is at work in you. And then he prays for them to have knowledge and insight so they can determine. So it's not just knowledge for the sake of knowledge, that you can do something with it and apply it. And the goal is to be pure and blameless, to have a harvest. So it's not just knowledge for the sake of knowledge. It's prayers for wisdom, that knowledge that will develop their character and to bear fruit. And I think that is important about them wanting that wisdom. And an example I've shared before, and I'm sharing it today, and I'll probably share it again. A family's got the three daughters that they're all sharp, got good heads on their shoulder, common sense. But the first one, now she is the book smart one, okay? She's very idealistic, and she's got common sense, but can get kind of, you know, a little dreamy, but still grounded. And the youngest one, she is street smart. She started her own business. Middle one is the wisest. Seems to bring those two things together. And as the mother said, in fact, when the father, I want a perspective of a young adult, it's the second daughter that he calls. Honey, what do you think about this? What is your take on this? Because she seems to be able to bring those two pieces together. And so that is the wisdom to make the best decisions at the moment. He wants them to be a praying church. And so if there's the takeaway, it's this. To be a praying church for wisdom and direction, both as a church and for ourselves. Wisdom for direction at the moment. Got a church example, got a personal example. Church example. Church in Atlanta had grown, kind of the suburban pioneers. I knew the pastor of the church, and from another context, I knew a member of the church, young adult. And, I mean, her 20s. And she said, I can remember my father, when he would get off from work, drive up Interstate 85, and he took this exit. It was a dirt road when you got off the interstate. Now, as she said it, that was a road that had about 6 lanes. Okay, now, at that point, one of those roads. But when they were out there, and they had built a kind of a multi-purpose building with the idea that eventually we'll build a sanctuary. Well, they had stayed that multi-purpose building for years. And for that young woman, that made it special. Now, they had folding chairs for worship. But she said, in that space, we had a church family supper. That's where it took place. If the youth had a lock-in or an indoor volleyball game, that's what we did there. And we worshiped there. And people got married and buried there. And the fact that everything in their church life took place in that room made it sacred for her. But as the pastor said, yes, it was great for those who first came out here. But folks, you know, one thing, we're no longer build it and they will come. The growth has moved out beyond us. I would say, okay, Rockwall versus Caddo Mills, okay, where Caddo Mills is now. And what I see coming, or by the time I get on the road, what I see already coming on 30 from Roy City and beyond. So this is a situation that, I mean, they're infill. There's like a neighborhood, their woods. There's going to be a neighborhood because it's Atlanta. They got trees. Here, neighborhood, neighborhood, field. Field becomes a neighborhood. Okay, y'all know what I'm talking about. So people are coming in, and it's not the same thing. You kind of pick a little bit now. You know, people moved to Forney in 1994. It's not the same as Forney 04, 14, or 24. Okay, and so to reach the people that are coming here, they're going to need a sanctuary, and they're going to need pews. And that was a hard decision for the older members to say, you know, we have to kind of give up doing everything in this one space. But for them, that was the wisest thing to do, put in the pews. Well, church number two, out in California, and they got a big, honking big sanctuary. And they have a chapel that they use some. And the church was approached by a woman who had a Bible study for women who had gotten out of prison. They're on probation, they're getting jobs, trying to get settled. And she said, they come from a very interesting background. I don't think the kind of standard studies atmosphere would work for them. As the pastor said, one of these, he met one of the women in the Bible study, and she said, in all seriousness now, said, now, okay, I'm a Christian. Does that mean I have to give up my witchcraft? Okay, we're talking, this is on the edge. So we're glad, yeah, we need to give you space. That's probably the best ministry we can do right now. And they've grown so large that the chapel, but the pews kind of prohibited the discussion. So after a lot of prayerful discernment, they repurposed their pews and put in chairs. Now, this is not about to say, now that's why we need to get rid of pews here. Don't worry. Don't panic, okay? But it's interesting is that wisdom led one church to build and put in pews. And for another church, the wise thing was to take the pews out of one of the worship spaces, not the main sanctuary, but for that space, for it to be used for God's glory. And see, that's the whole thing of wisdom, is that it's understanding in this, knowing the past situation, future hopes, present circumstances, what's the wise thing to do? What does it mean it this way? Now, got a high school friend, personal example later, high school friend. And when he graduated Appalachian State, married his high school sweetheart. And, you know, I remember when they first started dating and all that kind of mushy stuff. And so they get married, and then they have their two boys. And high school friend, Lynn, is his name, superstar, jock, good student, good jock, and he coached their baseball team. Little League, he's coaching their baseball team. And he kept doing it for several years. And he is the kind of guy you want coaching your kids, okay? He's just a good, solid guy. So the wise thing was to be coaching. But then he needed to step down, let another generation step in as coaches. And so he did. And then his oldest son, Marcus, married his sweetheart, I think high school or college sweetheart, married pretty much right after he graduated. About a couple of years later, they're having a couple of boys. And then for the past year, because he tagged my friend, I saw it on social media, now Marcus is coaching his sons in Little League. And he said in the post that I needed to get my dad to come out of retirement and to join the coaching staff. So you got the nice picture. You got three generations, a grandfather, a father, and the two grandsons are there. And, you know, again, for my friend, he is sort of the sage coach. He's behind the scenes, kind of coaching his son, kind of remedying, kind of working with the kids. He's got perspective, so he's the sage coach, I'm going to say, the wise one there. So for him at that point, the wise thing was to step back into it, but do something differently. And we know that. Sometimes it is to begin something, stop doing something, do something different, re-enter, but doing it differently. One man taught back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, taught a college Sunday school class at a church. There was a town that had a Presbyterian college there, and the students were expected to go to church. They had to turn in the bulletin, and the honor council checked it off. Yes, you've been to church. I'm sure more than one person went to church, got the bulletin, and snuck out, but that's between them and the Lord. This church did have a good, thriving Sunday school class, but late 60s come along, things change, and they don't have the class. And he was having some eyesight problems, so regardless, he needed to step down. But he was approached about the two-year-old Sunday school class. They need a grandfather figure. We got somebody to teach the lesson, but just to have, here's what we're going to get a rocking chair for you, and you can be there and just be the grandfather. Hey, just do it for 1 year and see what it's like. And he did it for the next 14 years of his life, to come in as the grandfather. That was the wise thing to do. So again, sometimes we're directed to retool in a different direction. Again, like my friend who is the coach. Sometimes we take it on, sometimes we let it go. Sometimes we take it on in a new way, or bad stuff, or pick right back up where we left off. Paul's is just excited about the Philippians. They're not perfect, but they're doing pretty good. And so how do we do better? And he calls them to be a praying church, to pray for wisdom. As his prayer really is for all churches, to be praying churches, to pray for wisdom, for direction. Now, on your cover, you will notice three boats. And up here, this boat is on the Sea of Galilee. And they're getting prepared to take, actually, I was on this boat, and they're getting prepared to take us across the sea to Capernaum. So yes, they're docked, but they're checking fuel, checking the conditions. That was a good day for going across, so that was not a problem. But they're going through their checkout. Yes, they're docked, but they are going through their checkout to prepare for the next step. Now over here, next top, this is a boat in Mobile Bay. This summer we were on the ferry crossing it. Little ferry, big boat. The ferry just stopped and waited, okay? So we just, heard that engine go off, and we just floated while they moved along. Big boat, okay? They're trying to race them. But it's going about its business. Then at the bottom, this is a boat we saw at Bayou La Batre, down right where the bayou comes into another bay in that area. And there were two former gambling boats there. And I'm not going to say one thing or the other about gambling, but this was not in use. A man had bought it and said, at some point, someday, he was going to get it fixed. So at that point, $600 a month he is paying to have it into an open storage. And they said apparently this had been for some time. That's why it's one of those, someday I'm going to get this done. Going to get it fixed up and maybe be gambling boats again, or maybe used for entertainment purposes. Anyway, it struck me about the different boats. Now, two are docked and one is moving. But of the two that are docked, one is docked to get prepared for the next step. And the other is docked basically just rot in the water. And there can be churches that are like that. There's a church that's got its mission, its reason, its activity, and they are going nonstop. And we know churches that are like that. But if a church is wise, periodically they're going to have a season where they dock and they say, Lord, what's next? Let's evaluate. Now, some churches, they're stopped over here and they're going over there, so. But I hope you get the idea. The idea of these periodic seasons that we maybe need to take things lower and see what's next, what is best. And sad to say, there are churches that are in seasons where they're just docked and not really doing much. I know one person spoke of his church at a season of activity, but he said, I look back to this period, we were insular and we were insulated, we weren't doing anything and we were not going anywhere. They were not even at that point of thinking, and then they brought in a new mission emphasis. But again, that can happen for people as well. To land this, because I'm going to land it, to land this plane, as we're in the season now of stewardship, looking at a church from different angles, and we're going to be looking at Philippi church there from different angles over the next several weeks. As you're thinking about what is next, as we've got the Project Regeneration in a season of prayer, my hope is that we will be a church of prayer this fall. And to pray for wisdom. And to pray that what we are led to do will lead us to bear fruit. For God who began a work in all y'all will see it to completion. Thanks be to God. Amen.